4, 3, 2. Log Talk Radio. From her eyes to behind her ear, she looks up at me with a guilty smile. She is so cute to me. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your radio reason and streaming internet radio station, the Libertarian Voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from your studio, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, January 20th, 2008. It is now about 8:01 Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. And now on to our program. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. We have five lines open, folks, so please feel free to call in. I know there's a football game going on, so for those people who are more interested in their liberty than in their football bet, please call in 646-652-4620. Email us at any time to comments at libertytalkradio.com. That's comments at libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com. That too is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you, and I should say current economic issues. Up to date, literally, as they are happening, he discusses them. And please consider subscribing to his newsletter. You'll be supporting a worthy cause because he is performing a service that we all need and need desperately today. Well, I also like to mention that you can subscribe to our newsletter, soon to be newsletter, hopefully. I mean, just regarding this program, with program reminders by subscribing. So if you just subscribe right now, you'll get a program reminder, and that's what we're working on right now. Be patient with us. All right, thank you very much. Folks, last week, or I should say Thursday morning, we talked about how the politicians today could not possibly be representatives of the people, because in order to be a representative of all the people, you must represent the rights and liberties of all the people. Once you promise any group of people, even collectively all the people within a state, you are no longer a representative, you are a politician, because the government has nothing, has no money, has nothing. In fact, right now our government is bankrupt beyond your imagination. So the only way that the government can provide something to you for free is to take it from someone else. Now, if they take it from someone else, they cannot be representing that person. So you see, there's a contradictory situation we have here where no one could possibly be a politician and represent everyone in office. And unfortunately, this is the way we vote. We vote for people who promise us the most. This is what we hear during these caucuses and the primaries. We say, well, geez, you know, I identify mostly with this person. I identify mostly with that person. And this person is closer to my values or my belief systems, whatever that's supposed to mean. And that word belief is starting to get really under my skin, because I have no idea what people mean when they say that. Well, if they say that they identify more with him than with someone else, what is it that this person is promising them? if it is something that's proprietary to them, it's got to be coming from somebody else. If it's coming from somebody else, then that other person is losing some of their liberty, some of their rights, and some of their freedom. So that you cannot possibly be a politician and a representative at the same time. The only thing that a representative can promise is to ensure that the individual's rights, their liberty, and their freedom are preserved, and that they can go about their business without intervention, without being taxed to death, without being hampered, of course, provided that they're not infringing upon the rights of others. Isn't that interesting? But you never hear that. What I find interesting is now that this financial fiasco that's been going on for the past 40 years with the Federal Reserve is finally coming to a head. In fact, I read an article in the American Institute of Economic Research, which I just received yesterday. That was Saturday, January 19th in the mail. And for the first time, they're very conservative in the way they approach things, by the way. They don't take radical approaches. They try not to step outside, but they present the facts. They just do research. And what I like about the American Institute of Economic Research, which I think everyone should subscribe to, is that they take money from no one. There's no grants given to them, no donations given to them by special interest groups, just their subscribers. And whatever their subscribers give them, that's what they work with. In fact, one time they said their front door rotted, and they wrote me a letter and said, well, I contribute to a new front door, and I gave them money for a new front door. I mean, that's the way it should be. I don't influence them at all. I don't tell them what to write or anything. So, see, their voice is totally unbiased. But they make sure that they don't take a radical point of view, like they project what's going to happen and watch out. They're not a the sky is falling type of publication or institution. But this time, they started to compare somewhat part of the programs that are being enacted today. Not everything, but part of the programs being enacted today with the programs being enacted in 1930. And how they were an abject failure, and how they exacerbated the Depression, and we see it happening all over again. What I find interesting is that I heard someone talk many years ago about the Depression. I think this was during our little recession that we had here in 2001 to 2003. And the person said, well, no, we're not heading for a depression. You see, in a depression, you need to have a confluence of events occurring all perfectly at the same time. And I hate to use that hackneyed expression, you know, the perfect storm type thing. But in 1930, we had sort of that perfect financial storm. And they said it's highly, highly unlikely, almost impossible, for really all of these things to converge once again to cause such a vibrant economy to literally collapse or go into a deep depression. And now, what do we have? We have the remnants of the Depression years upon us. We have that proverbial perfect storm upon us. Everything that shouldn't happen is happening. And folks, this is very dangerous. Now, I'm not I don't want to be the messenger of doom or anything like that, or the sky is falling. But I do want my listeners to please understand, whether you're in the United States or outside of the United States, it makes no difference. Because if the United States financial institutions collapse, it will have a tsunami effect, financial effect around the world. Everyone will feel it. People in Malaysia will feel it. People in China will feel it. Hong Kong, Hong Kong is part of China, I'm sorry, but Japan will feel it. Everyone, Europe will get hit hard. There could be worldwide financial collapse. Now, the problem with that, and before we get on the energy issue, by the way, I got to get this off my chest, but you must understand, in the event of a financial calamity, the question you have to ask, where is your safe haven? Now, back in the 30s, your safe haven was the dollar, because the dollar was backed by gold. In other words, you could bring it to the treasury. It was like a receipt for gold. That's all the dollar was. It was a receipt for gold. And this is a function that the Federal Reserve did not have to perform. It could have been performed outside of government. It could have been privately done, which it should have been done. Another story for another time. But this was a receipt. It was like having a little receipt in your hand from the treasury saying, here's your receipt. We're holding on your behalf, you know, the $1 or $20 or whatever worth of gold, and you can redeem it at any time. So dollars were in fact hard currency. Our coinage were 90% silver. Now the problem was is that people didn't have enough of this. There wasn't enough in circulation, and government programs just exaggerated the situation as it was, because they took the steam out of the industrial sector and put it into the political sector. I won't go into that, but they just continued to compound the problem and made things worse. The more money they spent out of government, the more industry was churning out goods and services for government pet projects. Basically, the deeper we got, the more reluctant we were unlikely we were to ever pull ourselves out. And that's why the war pulled us out, because there was no choice but to everyone just to produce 100% and go into hellacious debt, you know, to win a war. But my point being is that that was the problem. If, in fact, you were clever enough or lucky enough to get some dollars, to get even coins, anything, you were in good shape. If a car prior to the Depression, let's say 1928, cost $700, you could have bought that car in the 1930s for $400. You see, there was a depression. Everything went down in value. You may have had the same number of dollars, but your dollars bought more. Now, fast forward to today. We do not have that situation today. Therein lies the problem. Where is your store of value? Are you going to collect dollars that are not backed by anything, that are just basically just printed? They're just printed paper saying Federal Reserve note, go spend it the way you like, use it as legal tender. The government said it's okay. So we have everyone who is worried saying, good, now what do I do? And they don't know what to do. They don't know where to turn. If they sell assets, whether it be their stocks, their bonds, whatever it is, and they convert anything to cash, they don't have cash. They have Federal Reserve notes, and this is the stuff that's being depreciated. It is not the goods that could be purchased that are being depreciated. It's the dollars that are depreciated. We have the exact same situation as we had in the Depression years in reverse, though. We had the negative of it, if you will. Because here, prices of things relative to the dollar will go up exponentially in price, because there will be tons of paper, worthless dollars in the marketplace. The same thing that the oil-producing countries are doing to us, we will do to ourselves. Please understand that. Now, the price of oil is going up only because the dollars are worth less and buy less. So the prices are going up. So if you want to protect yourself, do you put all of your assets in cash? Well, probably not. Not probably not. Absolutely not. You want to get rid of the cash, like the Saudis want to get rid of, like all the oil-producing nations, like all the nations that are holding dollars want to get rid of cash now. And they don't know how to get it. They can't get rid of it fast enough. They can't buy American corporations fast enough. They can't dump enough dollars fast enough. And as we lower the interest rates, and as we promise more and more printing press programs, for example, Bush wants to give everyone $800. Well, that's 1% of GDP. Apparently 1%, that's what they calculated it. So here we have 1% of GDP being printed off the printing press. An incredibly hyperinflationary move. Now, do you think the Saudis are going to sit there and say, okay, oil closed at $92 a barrel yesterday. They printed another few hundred billion dollars, extra dollars. We'll keep it at 92. No, they just depreciated their dollar. So automatically that $92 barrel oil would be 94 or whatever the equivalent is, or 95 or $100 a barrel. So now when we buy oil, we have to buy it at a higher price. When we buy it at a higher price, we go to the service station, and instead of the gas being what it was the day before, it is higher. Now, of course, we're going to blame the oil companies, and now we're going to get into that with Hillary Clinton and her comments regarding energy independence. We're going to get into that in a second. But we have a little time, and we do have five lines open, folks. It's 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Please call in. Let me have your remarks, your comments, and your questions, please. Now, I know there's a big football game going on. I think the Giants playing Green Bay, and I think Green Bay is clobbering the Giants, you know? Wow, my old team, the New York Giants. Anyway, so here we are, and we're in this trap where no matter what Bernanke does, it's a loser. If he raises interest rates, businesses will invest less. If they lower interest rates, he causes inflation. You see, the Federal Reserve was designed never to work. It can't work because it's supposed to ameliorate any of the swings in financial activity, you know, which they can't really have very little effect over. They're supposed to ensure that the country doesn't go into a high level of inflation. They're supposed to cover the government debt. And all these objectives, one contradicts with another. If they do one, they exasperate another. If they do the other, they exasperate the others. So they can't ever do it right. And that's why we've had, ever since the Federal Reserve has been in effect, we've had depressions, we've had recessions, we've had high interest rates, we've had high unemployment, low unemployment, all over the board. We haven't had a steady financial situation at all. We're always fighting it, one to the other, one to the other. We go back and forth. Well, now things have gotten so out of hand because the government has allowed the banks, because they're going to guarantee the banks, they're going to get their money anyway, banks to give away money to people who are unqualified. And now we have, it's now in the trillions of dollars out there in which that are going to go defunct. And that's going to hurt everyone. Banks are going bankrupt all over the place. Now, folks, this is not going to be pretty. It may not happen tomorrow, but it will happen. And it will happen within the next 2 years. By the time the close of 2009, we are going to see this country in severe financial trouble. Severe financial trouble. We're going to have a financial trauma that will jeopardize everyone's position in this economy. I know this is doom and gloom, but this is where we are. What I find interesting is that people realize that. They know that. They say, well, they feel that. They feel the pinch, the high prices, you know, the government that they can't trust, wars that we shouldn't be in. They realize that. But they have no idea why it's happening and what to do about it. And if you suggest to them some libertarian principles that should be enacted, they say, oh, that's too radical. Well, I don't know what's so unradical about where we are now. Where we are now, we're in a hole. And we cannot, and we're in a hole that's very muddy. And we can't dig ourselves out. The more we dig, the deeper we get. It was interesting. I had an opportunity to speak to a person that I hadn't spoken to in many years in California. Friend's wife, rather. And we chatted on the phone. Very wonderful gal. And she says, oh, you're a libertarian? I think I'm a libertarian, too. I said, well, are you going to vote for Ron Paul? She says, oh, no, I don't think so. People don't understand. Now, how could you be a libertarian? Oh, and she says, no, I think I'll vote for Mitt Romney. Now, I didn't want to get in a political discussion. I haven't spoken to this gal in a couple of decades, you know? And I said, well, geez, I'm not going to get a political discussion on the phone here. But, you know, first of all, I'm a libertarian. I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney. Well, it is amazing the lack of misinformation that people have, the misunderstanding. And the and then when I say ignorance, I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, because I'm ignorant about 99.999% of the things that are going on. But but ignorance about something that is so vital to their survival. You know, I told you just the other day, a couple of programs ago, that I thought I was going to get off the air because if Ron Paul couldn't get a better representation than 6 or 8% in these primaries, and he has $10 million behind him, and he has a following second to none. I mean, the following that Ron Paul has is almost to the point of being fanatical. And they are, as people say, he doesn't have supporters. He has missionaries. And yet he can only garner 6 or 8% of the vote. What am I doing on the air? Why am I wasting my time on a Sunday evening when I could be watching a football game with my feet up on the ottoman, having maybe potato chips and a Coke, and just relaxing and not having to worry about this? And I get angry. I get real angry. Not with my listeners, obviously. I get angry with myself. I say, why am I doing this? Does anyone really care? Is anyone listening? If they are listening, do they really understand? I don't think they do. I don't think people truly understand. The question is if you received $800 from the government, what would you do with it? Please call in 646-652-4620. I'd like for you to tell me. Please call in 646-652-4620. Call in and tell me what you would do with your $800 and how that would help secure your future. No calls are on the line. I know it's football night, but no calls are on the line. I guess I don't blame them. I should be listening to a football game and not doing this. In fact, you know, I didn't even have a phone line. I had to reconnect somehow with the how to get the phone company. I mean, last-ditch effort, and I think it worked. So I was very lucky in getting on here. Now, I want to read something. This is from the Information Clearinghouse. And, folks, I do recommend that you support them. It's the Information Clearinghouse on the Internet. And they had a blurb here. And the last sentence was cut off, unfortunately. It says, Everything in war is barbaric. But the worst barbarity of war is that it forces men collectively to commit acts against which individually they would revolt to, you know, during peace. And that's absolutely right. Do you know our government takes young boys and makes them believe that they are risking their lives for a worthy cause? Well, that's not the case, and has not been the case for well over 100 years. We have a government that doesn't care how many boys get killed, provided that the financial institutions that are behind our government are protected. It can be 3,000 that we've lost in Iraq. It can be 30,000. Doesn't make any difference. They would stop doing something. They would stop the war only if they were faced with an absolute revolt by the populace, and the populace started to speak up and storm the White House. Then maybe they would do something. Maybe they would do something. But it makes no difference to these people, because they have no allegiance to America. They have no allegiance to family. They have no allegiance to anything whatsoever other than money and power, and mostly power that begets the money. So in today's, if I had young boys that were eligible to go to war, I would not let them go. I mean, I would do everything in my power not to let them go. Not because I'm anti-American, because I am American. I'm a revolutionary. I don't want us to be entangled in foreign countries. I don't want us to perpetuate any more killing around the world than we already have. I don't want my family to be part of that. I don't want any of my listeners to be part of that. I don't want to be part of that. I don't want anyone to be part of that. And we should be revolting, and we're not. But we just carry the country banner. Oh, we're there to fight terrorism, and we can't make those Islamic fascists, you know, come over here and kill us all and take over our government. Oh, what crap! What unadulterated garbage we believe, without thought. We cannot think as a nation. We just do not think. The war on terror is a fraud. There's no terrorism. Yes, there are small groups of people who would like to wake us up and say, guys, get off of our territory, and if you don't, every once in a while when we have an opportunity, we'll blow something up. That doesn't require a worldwide war on terrorism and the restriction of our liberties. What that requires for our government to do is to wake up and say, you know, we should not be entangling ourselves in foreign countries. The oil-producing countries are sovereign nations. Let them operate independently. We will be their best customer. They will treat us well. If they treat us well, there will be no terror. And it's as simple as that. And Islamic terrorism is no different than Christian terrorism. None whatsoever. We say, well, look, they flew planes into our buildings. We fly planes into their buildings every day. And we have been for the past 15 or 18 years. Why aren't we terrorists? If there's a war on terror, we should get rid of President Bush and hang him. Get rid of the worst terrorist there is. And that's the way they feel. Anyway, now, here's a quote from economist Patty Kaevsky, who wrote in the film The Network. Remember that? That's about 30 years old. Listen to them. The Arabs have taken billions of dollars out of this country, and now they must put it back. It is ebb and flow, tidal gravity. There are no nations. There are no peoples. There is only one vast and immense interwoven multinational dominion of petrodollars. There is no America. There is no democracy. The world is a business, one vast and ecumenical holding company for whom all men will work. That was in the movie Network. Truer words have never been spoken, and they're as true today as they were back then. Folks, let's talk a little bit about the energy policy. I still have no calls. 646-652-4620. Please call in, you know, and give me your opinion. Let me know what you're going to do with your $800. And as if that $800 was sitting in a vault somewhere in gold and silver and he was going to give it out to everyone, which would be a good thing to do if they did have it. But it they don't have it. They're just going to print more dollars anyway. So think about what you think I'm going to do. Tell me what you think I'm going to do with my $800 and my wife's $800. I'm going to confiscate it from her. 646-652-4620 or send me your comments at comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you send the email, I'll have to respond to you during our next live broadcast. All right. Here is the candidates for president want very badly to do something dramatic so they can become elected. Say something dramatic that sounds good. And the thing that sounds good now is because the oil companies are making lots of money, they know what to do with this money more so than the oil companies. But just think about it. If they take the profits from the oil companies, why not the cigarette companies? If not the cigarette companies, why not the companies that make lumber? Why not every company? I mean, if the government knows better what to do, why not? Why not have the government take all the profits of all the companies within the United States and reallocate it, because they obviously know better what to do than those companies? Now, Hillary Clinton said this: the oil companies reported the highest profits in the history of the world. I want to take those profits and I want to put them into the Strategic Energy Fund that will begin to fund alternative smart energy, alternatives and technology that will begin to actually move us towards the direction of independence. This statement, it says, this is the American Institute of Economic Research. This is the last edition. Let's see. November 19th edition. This statement, it says, is breathtaking in its arrogance. Mrs. Clinton seems to believe that the oil company profits should be hers for the taking rather than used to pay dividends to stockholders, pension funds included, or in reinvested in production, research, and development. In other words, she knows better what to do with the money. And just what is that? Well, first and foremost is continuing support for subsidies for renewable biofuels such as ethanol and the biodiesel. Even the candidates like John McCain, who used to oppose such program, now support them. And what does that mean when the government subsidizes something like that? That means it is not economically feasible to do. If it's not economically feasible and requires government subsidies, that means it should wait its turn. Its time has not come. Now, that's taking money, if I'm a stockholder of an oil company, that's taking money out of my pocket and giving it to politically correct people, politically connected people in the ethanol business, and building ethanol plants and doing something that's uneconomical and inefficient. It's raping our farmlands. It is increasing the price of all crops because people are going to start planting those crops in what that these biofuel companies will buy in order to make diesel fuel. So they'll stop producing or growing other crops that are necessary because it's less profitable. But it's not less profitable because it's a matter of supply and demand. It's a matter of supply and subsidy. And as a result, when you go to the store, your can of beans, instead of being 49 cents, it's 69 cents. Everything gets more expensive. Plus, the government's going to take your tax dollars and subsidize these politically motivated people who have these ethanol companies, give them the money, so now your taxes, you're being taxed to do that. Then you buy ethanol, and ethanol gets half the mileage, or about half the mileage that regular gasoline gets, so you get worse gas mileage in your car. You get hit at least three times, if not four and five times over. And these politicians will tell you that it's good for you. And we are so damn stupid, we say, good, well, I'll vote for that person. That person really cares for America. The audacity that this woman has. She wants to start a strategic energy fund. And what she says is, she said this will be invested in clean energy technologies, including renewable energy, energy efficiency, clean coal, plug-in hybrids, cellulosic, ethanol, and other biofuels and more. She describes it sort of as the Apollo project of like project of the of years ago. The Apollo project of energy independence. Yeah, you know, it's as if the oil companies are saying, "No, we're not going to do that." Hey, Clyde, you think we should do some research into renewable energy or any other alternative sources? No, doofus. I don't think we should do that. We'll just make the dirty oil and flood the place and make plenty of money so you and I can go out and get drunk. That's okay. You know, what a stupid... I mean, that's the impression she wants to give everybody, as if she's concerned, but the oil companies are not. Well, the oil companies are concerned, if not for their own hide. In the United States, who owns and operates one of the biggest wind farms in the United States? The U.S. government? No. Royal Dutch Shell. Would you believe it? And it's a foreign company. And it's one of the world's, I think it's the second largest oil company. And it owns a wind farm, a very big one, if not the biggest one in the United States. They're not oblivious to this. If they can make money from it, fine. When the price of oil goes up to a point where they can, alternatives can compete without taxing the taxpayer and without destroying basic economics, the law of supply and demand and basic economics, the way the country runs, then they'll do it. And they're not going to do it 1 minute before. They will prepare for it. And that's what they're doing now. And that's what they use their profits for. Let me give you an example. There is a rig out in the Gulf of Mexico, off of Mexico, in fact. And they shut that rig down because it was too expensive to extract the oil. They said when oil goes up further, in fact, I think on this rig, they said when it was a real expensive rig. They really miscalculated. When oil gets to $200 a barrel, we'll pump again. Well, the oil companies want to pump oil. They want to get oil out of the ground. They want to sell it. That's how they make their money. All right, hold on 1 second. We do have a caller. Caller, can you hear me? This is Liberty Talk Radio. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Oh, okay. My first name is Jody, and I'm calling from Wichita, Kansas.
Jody from Wichita, Kansas. Welcome to Liberty Talk Radio. Thank you for calling in. Your comments, please.
Okay. Well, it's kind of a comment and a question. I'm really concerned with the state of the dollar and then the government coming up with this plan just to print out a bunch more and hand out to everybody. I feel like that'll probably destabilize the dollar even more. For those of us who haven't been investing in gold for the last 10 years, is there any way that we can shore up? What should we be doing in order to protect ourselves against an economic collapse? Is land a good investment? Is groceries, anything that provides food, a good investment? What's good? Because right now I'm really skeptical of anything in the stock market. I'm really skeptical of anything in real estate. And I don't have a bunch of money to go drop in gold. Any recommendations?
Well, Jody, about 35 years ago, and I say about because I don't recall exactly when, and I wish I can tell you who said this, but 35 years ago, I heard a guy give a speech, and at the time I was raising a family, and I was involved in, you know, what family people do, and, you know, Little League and everything else like that. But I heard a guy give a speech. And he said, unlike the Depression of the 1930s, our next financial collapse, and whenever that may be, it can be next Thursday or it can be 50 years from now, he said you'll want to have things of value because instead of the dollar being king, the dollar will be worthless. Now, at that time, it bothered me because I really did not understand what he meant by that. I mean, I understood what he said, but I couldn't convert it into something practical. I said, what do you mean something of value, something of value? That sort of got stuck in the back of my head, and I must have played that record nearly every day for 35 years, you know? And so I was sort of in a quandary, as you were, but I've been playing with this for a long time, and you realize, first of all, you mentioned food. You can never, ever go wrong if you can buy food that will not spoil, you know, either canned foods or whatever that have long-lasting beans, for example. I mean, beans last forever. Grains last forever. And they're incredibly inexpensive, and you can eat forever on the stuff, you know. So, yes, food would be something I think all survivalists will tell you. Anyone, in fact, anyone who has been in Europe during World War, lived in Europe during World War II, and living in the United States, you'll find that their mentality is so different than ours. They buy things with the thought of, what if it's not available tomorrow? You know, what if there's a shutdown? What if there's an air raid? You know, they still think that way because we're a product of our own experiences. A very good friend of mine, his mother, who's still alive, by the way, and kicking and doing quite well, she survived Nazi Germany. I mean, she lost most of her family through the bombings of Berlin and the whole bit. So, I mean, she's been through it all. And, you know, she still carries that with her. And he talks about his mother all the time. He says, it's amazing. You go over the house and she'll do things that are so atypical of Americans, you know. She'll save this. She won't spend that. She will not tell anyone where her money is. I mean, in fear that someone will take it away. It's very, very interesting. So to better answer your question, first of all, you can never go wrong with food. But, you know, obviously you need things other than food. I'm not a financial advisor. Everyone's got to do what they feel comfortable with. And I'll tell you what I feel comfortable with right now. I would feel comfortable buying silver. Silver is still incredibly inexpensive. Historically, gold sells for 15 times the value of silver. Right now, gold is somewhere between, I think, 50 and 60 times the value of silver. If there's any investment sitting there waiting to explode, especially if the man on the street becomes concerned and nervous and wakes up, silver will go up exponentially, and you can never lose by it because it's still a store of value. So if you want to have something hard value, and gold really is very expensive. Actually, gold is not expensive today. Relative to the dollar, gold is not much more expensive than it was 10 years ago. It's a little bit more expensive, but the dollar has inflated and depreciated so much, it's basically just keeping its head above water. But silver is still inexpensive. But don't buy silver coins that have any numismatic value. Buy coins with very little. You can buy just bulk silver bars that have been assayed and they have numbers on them so they don't have to be weighed and tested and all that. Or you can buy old silver coins. My favorite of buying the old Morgan coins from 1921 and before that are not particularly in great condition, but good condition, and they sell for like $13 or $14 each. You pay a little premium, but they're just great coins to have. Or you can buy American Eagle, so the American Eagle, which is the Walking Liberty silver dollar. It's 1 ounce of silver. You pay a little premium for that. Most beautiful coin ever minted in the world, you know. Or you can just buy the cheapest thing to buy is basically what they call junk silvers, coins that were minted prior to 1965, and you can buy them in small quantities or buy the coin or buy the bag or buy the bushel. And I would have some silver. If you can afford gold, I would do that. If you don't want to take possession, and obviously don't keep it in your house or, you know, on the kitchen table, have a safety deposit box in a bank. This is my opinion, and I'm not a financial advisor, and I hate doing this because I have to have all sorts of disclaimers, you know, but have it in a bank that probably would not close. In other words, there are banks that are big enough that the government would not allow them to close because it would violate the principle principle of what they call essentiality. For example, if Chase Manhattan closed, that would be a major hit to the American economy. If, you know, the local Valley National Bank closed, no one would know it because it's only, you know, it's only a neighborhood bank. So I would keep it in a major bank in a safety deposit box. Or if you have some land, just bury it somewhere that you'll probably need it. That's probably the safest place to put it. Another thing that I would do is if you want to, if you do have an online account, you can buy electronic trading funds in gold and silver, and you can buy fractional amounts there. So you, there's other ways of investing. And you can also invest in mining companies. And mining companies, for example, some of them are very expensive today, but Freeport-McMoRan, well, they mine copper, aluminum, uranium, you know, you name it, they mine it, including gold and silver, which becomes a byproduct of their mining process. And when gold and silver take off, these mining stocks will go up even further. I mean, now they're very volatile, and you got to have a real hard stomach, real tough stomach for it, but you can invest that way. I would suggest that you stay out of cash.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You want to stay out of cash, and you don't want to buy stuff that you cannot use. I mean, forget about the high-definition television sets and stuff like that. That's all garbage. I mean, that's stuff that's nice to have. But when we're talking about whether or not we're going to survive through a financial crisis, high-definition TV or not is not going to make or break you at all.
Yeah, oh, I agree. So just, again, I don't want to be a doomsayer or anything like this, but I've been making a huge point to watch and keep track of the economy. And as an electrician, you mentioned copper, and I've seen copper in the last 3 years go up almost 300%.
That's correct.
As an electrician, you know, you've got to use clean copper. There just isn't anything
right
to use. But my question, I'm really pessimistic to the point now where I really don't see there being any way to save the dollar. And because, you know, I mean, basically we've pretty much come to the consensus now that we're just going to, you know, give up $159 billion. We're just going to hand those out.
Right.
And, you know, that money's absolutely not there. And as far as I'm concerned, anybody with the intelligence to play Monopoly knows that that doesn't work.
That's correct.
You know, I mean, all you can do is make the game last a little longer.
Right.
But it gets ridiculous at some point.
Yeah.
In your opinion, do you feel like there's actually any saving of the dollar, or do you think that we're just headed for an economic meltdown of the U.S. dollar, somebody my age, 40, has just never witnessed before?
I'll say this, but understand that. Ever since I was a kid, you know, there's been this guy. Now, I'm from the streets of New York, and the streets of New York, there would always be some nutcake in the streets, you know, in Manhattan with the sign saying, you know, the end is near, you know. I mean, the guy had a beard. He was dressed all shabbily, and everyone left him alone. He just marched up and down, and in every neighborhood they had this guy saying, prophesizing basically the doom of the world or whatever. And so when I talk about this, I'm reminded, I said, I'm this guy now. You see, and this is the problem. I feel like I'm this guy with the sign saying the end is near. So you're asking me, do I think the end is near for the dollar? The answer is yes. I don't see how it could possibly survive. There is no way. There is no mechanism. There is no stopgap. There is no assurance. There's no way that the dollar can't collapse. Now, the reason why I know that is because I prefer to be on the side of history. And coinage and a common sort of currency has been in existence for 4,000 years in the world in different forms. And every single country, every empire and every country and every civilization that has had a currency that was not based on something of some intrinsic value has collapsed. Now, if 4,000 years of history is not a good track record for you, you know, nothing will be. So I'm saying we are taking the same course. When newsletters such as the American Institute of Economic Research, which I have in the absolute highest regard, start comparing the 1930s and the programs of the 1930s with the programs we have now, I say we are approaching that perfect storm. And I don't have any faith whatsoever that we are going to survive this unscathed at all. Now, how bad it's going to be, I don't know.
I think we're both seeing the same thing. And I look back over history as well. And I'm not, you know, as far as the end of the world and all of that, I'm not so much into that. But I definitely, I don't see a whole lot of saving of the U.S. dollar. And I'm seeing little signs, as an example, I don't want to mention any names, of course, but I know some people that have bought a house when the times were good and the interest rates have kind of beat them down, and they're a couple of months late on their mortgage. And the mortgage is through Chase Manhattan. And I know last month Chase Manhattan was basically telling them, you know, hey, we've got to get something done or we're going to have to foreclose. And now Chase Manhattan is calling them and saying, you know, now you're still in the house, right? You haven't moved out of the house and moved to an apartment. And, you know, hang in there and do the best you can, and, right, and we'll work with you, and there's going to be some kind of relief or something like that. And to have a mortgage company the size of Chase Manhattan suddenly, you know, really reaching out to try to keep people in their homes, I find that really more frightening than anything.
Yeah, well, you know, because I'm sorry.
Because usually, you know, you might get by with one, you might get by with two. By the time you approach the third one, you know, there's already people chomping at your heels.
Absolutely. You know, and one thing that no one's been addressing is that back in 1998, when long-term capital management collapsed and Greenspan came in and got the J.P. Morgans of this world to deposit all the big money changers to bail them out, because if we didn't bail out long-term capital management, it would have resulted, and they admit, I mean, this was in the Wall Street Journal, had large articles on the Wall Street Journal, I think two or three separate articles on this. They didn't bail long-term capital management out, it would have spelled disaster for the whole financial community. There would have been a financial collapse. That was one giant hedge fund. Today, we have 8,000 hedge funds, and they're all scrambling. No one's talking about this, but it's hidden, and it's unregulated. We have no idea what's happening with these funds. That we don't know what condition these funds are in, and we don't even know how many trillions are being lost. It's going to hit, Jody. Something's going to hit. We cannot get out of this thing. Well, geez, this one blew over pretty well. And if it does blow over, that means we're going to be left in a worse position than we were before. So the next blip is going to be exponentially worse. And I'm sorry. I hate saying that, because I feel like I'm with this guy with the sign saying the end is near. But I hate saying that, because I've never been that way.
I don't want to be that guy either. But again, history will show you. You know, you look at the Roman Empire, the Egyptians. You know, history will show you that every economy that's been built and based on error. I mean,
that's right. Exactly.
At some point, you know, somebody says, you know, hey, the king doesn't have any clothes on at all. You know, that's just, I kind of feel like that's definitely where we are.
Yeah, and you know that you're still on the bottom floor of buying gold and silver, because if you go out in the street and randomly talk to people about it, they go, oh yeah, well, I have dollars. It's backed by gold and silver. I mean, no, people are unaware. They know they're supposed to be, but they are unaware. I have friends that I speak to, I mean, good friends that I speak to, they go, you know, Joe, you're right, I really should do so. I say, I'm just telling you, you know, giving you sort of a heads up, because I know this is not your forte, this is my forte. You know, I'm a long-term investor. You know, this is the thing that I've always read. I have a radio station, blah, 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 blah. And I said, so this is my thing, and I'm just telling. And yet, I've been speaking to them for years, and they still haven't done anything. So you know you're still on the ground floor, because once my friends wake up, and I've been nudging the heck out of them, and the guys who haven't been nudged wake up, the price of silver is not going to be 16, 17, 18 cents announce it'll be, and that, in fact, there are literally projections that say that silver could even surpass the cost of gold per ounce. I know that's kind of radical, and the logic being is that there is less silver coins and less silver bullion in this world than there is gold bullion coins and bullion and gold coins. That's how strapped the whole world is. So, Jody, I think you're on the right page. Do whatever you can. I would subscribe to Andy Sutton's newsletter. It's free. He has a free newsletter, and then there's a subscription newsletter. I do urge you to do both and support him because he's a good man. It's mytwocentsonline.com. And if you subscribe to his newsletter, he will help you decide how and where to put your money.
Yep.
Okay? And Jody,
well,
also...
I don't have very much of it, but...
Makes no difference.
I'm looking for something.
If you have a little, someday it will be a hell of a lot. If you have none, it'll be worthless. I mean, you got to look at it that way. Forget about, you may not be the richest guy in the world. That's absolutely immaterial. And Jody, if you will send me email to comments@libertytalkradio.com, give me your mailing address and your t-shirt size, I will be more than happy to mail you an official Liberty Talk Radio t-shirt for calling in this evening.
Well, that would be great.
Fair enough?
Yeah. Great.
Okay.
I'm just really nervous. You know, I've got 20-year-old twin daughters. I've got a 10-year-old son. Me and my wife both work very hard, and I just to me, just the signs don't look good. And what you said about the ethanol, basically, when we've got something else bidding against the food that we actually put in our stomachs, that's just very frightening.
Right. I think
I bought a gallon of milk for $4.99 for a gallon of milk.
My goodness, yeah. And
you know, eggs, $2.10, $2.20 a dozen. And, you know, I mean, I'm not that old, but I can remember when you could get eggs for 49, 69 cents a dozen, and just as many as you wanted.
Relish the $2.99 eggs. You'll probably not see that again. I mean, that's the problem with it. If you remember that movie, I forgot which one it was, about the when the Arabs, it was a, about 30, 40 years ago, about the Arabs calling in their debts to the United States, and the a guy called, one of the scenes, this money manager, you know, money exchange manager calls his wife and says, I want you to sell everything and buy gold. And she says, gold is going for $2,000 an ounce. He says, that'll be cheap by the end of the day. Sell everything and get gold. You know, so I say the same thing to you. People say, oh, gold is so expensive. We ain't seen nothing yet, Jody. Ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, it's the one consistent currency that's held up for the last 4,000 years. I mean,
that's right.
Worthless.
And if nothing happens, you haven't lost a thing.
You know, and at this point, you know, I think when you're getting ready to look at $12, $15 a pound ground beef, you know,
that's right.
It would be nice to have some alternative.
Right.
Anyway, I thank you very much for your time, and I've got to say this is one of the more informative shows that I've actually listened to on the Blog Talk Radio, and I really appreciate what you're doing, and I hope you could put together a good listening base. However, I'm not real optimistic because I find that most people are really uninformed.
Unfortunately, you're right. And thank you so much for those comments. It makes it worthwhile, Jody. I appreciate so much your calling in.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good night now. Thank you. Boy, that was a nice call, wasn't it? That was Jody from Wichita, Kansas, and he has concerns, and he should be. And it's really is nice when someone calls in and says, I have a concern. What do you recommend? Now, you know, I don't give financial advice, but I'm just telling you, I tell you what I do. I tell you how I am. And, you know, there's no guarantees in anything. You've got to have a real, real tough stomach for this stuff. Anyway, well, I wonder what the score is on the football game. All right, I think I'm going to check that out. Well, this is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support. We'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. And remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. And remember, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, and that will be Thursday morning, 6:30 a.m., stay well. Stay tuned.